Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, what conditions were imposed by the government of the Dominican Republic on the Jewish refugees that they took in during World War II? The Dominican Republic was one of the very few countries willing to accept mass Jewish immigration during World War II. At the Evian Conference in 1938, it offered to accept up to 100,000 Jewish refugees. The DORSA, or Dominican Republic Settlement Association, was formed with the assistance of the Joint Distribution Committee and helped settle Jews in the town of Sosua on the northern coast. About 700 European Jews of Ashkenazi descent reached the settlement, where each family received 82 acres of land, 10 cows, a mule and a horse, and a $10,000 loan, equivalent to about $163,000 today, at 1% interest. Emilio Ramos Sabas is a lawyer who received a master's degree in refugee law from the University of London, with a specialization in human rights practice from the London School of Economics. He recently gave a presentation at Centro Sefarad Israel about Jewish refugees in the Dominican Republic, and later spoke with us about this little-known chapter in Holocaust history. Thank you very much for speaking with us today. First, could you give us a little background about the situation of the Jews in Germany and Austria, specifically in 1938 and the Evian Conference, and what happened there?
Jews became targets of anti-Semitic attacks, particularly in the eastern part of Berlin, where many Jews from Eastern Europe lived. This increased in the 30s to other groups of Jews, let's say more integrated, like students and lecturers in university. After the start in the Aryanization of Jewish companies at the beginning of the 30s, the pressure on the Jewish community continued to the extent that many Jews committed suicide and others decided to leave the country. In any case, the Kristallnacht pogrom was the turning point, which happened in November 1938, where most of the synagogues in Berlin were burned down, while Jewish schools, the Office of Jewish Public Institutions and others, were under attack.
Was there any resistance against this? I mean, this was going on for a long time. Did the normal German people just kind of look the other way?
The pressure increased over during the 30s, so it was really hard for them anyway. So to cope with that was really, really, really hard. So in the case, for instance, of Austria, whereas the Viennese Jews were well integrated, for instance, to the extent that a significant percentage of the city's doctors and lawyers, businessmen and bankers, artists and journalists were Jewish. In fact, the problem with the disintegration of the Habsburg Empire at the end of the First World War led to a sort of identity crisis in Austria, which affected to the Jewish population as they were considered aliens. So in March 1938, Germany invaded Austria, and in April of that year, the Austrians approved the annexation. This had an impact on the Jewish population. Many were arrested in the following days and sent to the Hau concentration camp while their property was confiscated. At the same time, Jews were expelled from universities, losing over 40% of their students and professors. In August 1938, Eichmann established an organization responsible for the solution of the Jewish problem. In Austria, its methods of persecution and deportation were later copied in Germany and other countries. Similarly, a special body was created in order to transfer the Jewish property to non-Jews. Concerning the Evian Conference, on July 1938, due to the American pressure, an international conference was held at Evian, France, to deal with the problem of the German and Austrian refugees, Jews.
Who attended?
I have to say first that you know, President Roosevelt was very interested in that. He promoted himself the conference. But anyway, delegates from 32 countries and representatives of 8 organizations, as well as observers of the U.S. Agency at the World Jewish Congress, participated in the conference. However, Germany, Italy, and Japan did not accept the invitation, while Poland, Hungary, and Romania, where there was a growing anti-Semitism, sent only observers. The Soviet Union refused to participate. The countries expressed their concern in general about the situation in Germany and Austria, but did not solve the issue of the U.S. refugees at all. Only the Dominican Republic decided to take up 100,000 refugees.
So basically, the Evian conference did nothing. They just talked about it, and the Dominican Republic was the only country that actually did anything?
Well, in general terms, that's true. But of course, there's something which perhaps has to be said in concerning the attitude of North America and of other countries as well. During the conference, the British government made clear that it would not be able to increase its quota for refugees due to high levels of unemployment. France also said that they were at the extreme point of saturation. Another example was an Australian delegate reported that they had a racial problem and they don't want to import one. Well, anyway, Hitler said that he was astonished to see that these countries criticized Germany for its policies towards Jews while they refused to open their borders to them. The United States, as I said before, advanced that whatever the outcome of the conference was, the immigration quota containing its laws of 1924 would not be modified, nor would it require any country to modify this and following the United Kingdom's request. The United States, however, agreed that the estimated quota of 30,000 for German-speaking migrants would be granted exclusively to Jewish refugees. I think that could be answered the question as well. But anyway, all countries refused to immediately accept Jewish refugees, with the sole exemption mentioned before of the Dominican Republic, claiming issues of economic, political, and racial problems.
So the Dominican Republic is a very small country. How come they offered to take 100,000? That's an awful lot of people.
Yes, that's true. Well, let's say that there are several reasons why the government wanted to take the initial amount of 100,000. Trujillo desire to take up advantage that no country was in the position to absorb such amount. In this way, the Dominican regime was helping the Americans to get rid of the problem of the U.S. refugees. We have to have in mind that at that time, Roosevelt had to face pressure at home with regard to those who did not want more migrants, and those particularly Jewish lobbies aiming at helping European Jews. However, some legal difficulties had to be overcome, such as the repeal of certain Dominican legislation that taxed immigration. Finally, these regulations were repealed in exchange for certain commercial concessions and the promotion of the Dominican Republic in the United States, which included favorable articles published in Hertz media, as well as the inclusion of professional lobbies in Washington.
So what you're saying is that the United States said, well, we don't want any, and actually we will help you a little bit if you take them. Is that what they were saying?
Yes, completely right. That's the approach. So anyway, they reached sort of a deal, so it was good for both sides, yeah, basically.
So what conditions did the Dominican Republic impose on the Jews that were to be resettled?
Yes, well, I have to mention that the final agreement with the Dominican Republic has a sort of clear objective. It reads as follows. It said that something like the Dominican Republic guarantees the settlers and their descendants the opportunity to continue with their lives and occupations without being persecuted or discriminated, with complete freedom in the exercise of the religion as well as their civil and economic rights. So the most important thing was to guarantee such freedoms in an environment that enabled the refugees to continue normally with their lives. There were, however, a couple of conditions imposed to the refugees. First, the Dominican government welcomed the Jews on the condition that they become agricultural workers rather than commission agents. Second, all refugees had to sign a previous declaration according to which they had to permanently reside in the Dominican Republic, assuming therefore the commitment of not to leave the island towards the States. This declaration was taken near the Ellis Island, where refugees obtained authorization on board from the United States with the sole destination to Sosua in the Dominican Republic. It must be said that the United States authorities did not want refugees to appear on the deck of the board, even to see New York. The authorities wanted to avoid Jews being introduced illegally into the country, to the extent that the refugees were locked up in the cellars of the boat. So, the first refugees began to arrive from Germany to Puerto Plata, 50 kilometers away from Sosua, during the months of March and May 1940, 6 weeks after Rosenberg signed the contract with the Dominican Republic. I have to say that Rosenberg was a key figure in the process of allowing the refugees to approach the island.
Who was Rosenberg?
Well, Rosenberg set up the DORSA, Dominican Republic Settlement Association, to negotiate and implement the agreement with the government.
Where was he from?
Well, he was American. He was American.
So tell us about Sosua and how the program was carried out.
Well, as mentioned, James Rosenberg founded this association, the Dominican Republic and Settlement Association, DORSA, to negotiate and implement an agreement with the Dominican Republic. However, the Joint Distribution Fund, the organization behind DORSA, was in charge to provide the Dominican government with the necessary funds in order to develop the settlement in Sosua. Rosenberg had to face, however, the criticism of those sectors that labeled Sosua's project as sectarian by being excessively Jewish. So he can contact Catholic and Protestant associations to open the spectrum to other potential refugees, although Sosua was finally reserved only for Jews, including some mixed marriage. Rosenberg also managed to get help from Zionist organization from Palestine, territory under the British rule, then facilitated the dispatch of some kibbutzim experts familiar with agricultural and livestock techniques in a collectivist context.
So some people from kibbutzim went to the Dominican Republic and taught them how to be farmers?
Yes. Well, very few, but some of them were sent from Israel, and then Palestine, now Israel, to teach how to deal with these techniques.
So what happened when the Jews arrived in the Sosua? What did they receive, and how many actually got there?
Well, the statement for the Jewish refugees, I have to say first to mention something about how was the place. The place itself was an abandoned banana plantation which belonged to the United Fruit Company. At the beginning, the settlers lived together in barracks with leaking roofs, so the conditions were not very good. Of course, afterwards, the conditions were much improved. Once there, they started to, learning the basic of farming, as I said before, with the help, of people from kibbutzim. Then some settlers moved to private small properties of 5 acres, more or less, and were provided animals and crate to buy goods at DORSA store. However, others decided to remain in collective farms. From a religious point of view, since most Jews in Sosua were observant, they were allowed to, with no restriction whatsoever, to enjoy a religious life. They had the Tefillah and Mijo festival together, while others, more observant, managed to get a separate kosher kitchen.
Did the Dominican government pay for all of this? Did they pay? Who paid for the animals and the other things they were given?
Basically, before it was the Joint Distribution Fund, which belonged to the American government, which provided basically for the funds an amount of more than $1 million.
Okay, so how many Jews actually were settled there? Because the Dominican Republic said that they would take 100,000. Did they take 100,000?
Of course, it was a better number, and was, to reach that, the number, the figure, but only 700 more or less arrived to Sosua. There are several reasons for this. First, things were getting worse in Germany and the occupied countries following the implementation of policies that limited exit visas from Germany. And second, after Pearl Harbor, the State Department claimed that refugees from Europe might include other non-Jews and in particular German spies. So that's why the U.S. government blocked the route to Sousse via the U.S. I have to say, for instance, that only 250 refugees authorized to come in June 1940, only 37 arrived in Sousse. That's a good example of how, you know, it worked.
So these 700 people arrived and they were given land and they were given animals and they were taught how to farm by these kibbutzniks from Palestine. How did they adapt? I mean, did they stay there? Were they happy? What happened?
There were some problems with integration. On the one hand, there were tension between Dorsa and the settlers, many of whom were deeply traumatized by the persecution they suffered. Actually, they perceived a sort of arrogance on the part of the benefactors. This is why it's so important, you know, the ways in which Tzedakah is implemented in showing to avoid such bad feelings. In addition, it seems that there were kind of disagreements between Jews of different backgrounds, so at the beginning, the integration was hard.
Was Sousse a Dominican? I mean, you said it was an abandoned place. Were there any Dominicans living there in the area, and did the Jews have any kind of interaction with them?
Well, it was said a former plantation belonged to the United Fruit Company. And, of course, now in the place were not many Dominicans. And they started to approach the Sousse because, of course, they wanted to be, you know, close to a new community and perhaps to do kind of so business together. So the integration was easy. And I have to say that, they very well welcomed, you know, the refugees from Europe.
What happened to this community? Are there still Jews in Sousse? Does it still exist as a community?
Well, overall, the Jewish community flourished in a friendly environment. These refugees could slowly recover from the Nazi horror. They built a synagogue, a school, and dairy production factories. Although after the war, some left for the U.S. or Israel, currently around 25 families remain in Sousse are responsible for dairy production in the country.
Only 25 families?
25 families, yes.
Not very many. Is there anything else you would like to add that we might have left out?
Well, their reconnection to Dominican people who fulfill the mitzvah, love your fellow as yourself. Well, as a result of the good relations between the refugees and the Dominicans, whose collaboration was fundamental for the existence of the settlement and the survival of the community as a whole. It's worth recalling that for Judaism, individual and collective rights are born when obligations are fulfilled in relation to others. From this perspective, the Dominicans deserve being holders of rights and freedoms, since they very welcomed refugees with affection. I have to say something that next to the town synagogue, there is a museum. It can be read following Sousse. It's a community born of pain, fed by love, and this must represent the triumph of life.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSephirah.com. See you next week.